Thanks so much for being here. Just a couple of this is and that. There are enough of you that expressed an interest in having an overtime reading of yesterday's discussion, mainly on the processing of the Gospel of Mary and its ascent to heaven, or ascent to God. And so there are enough of you that, from my point of view, meeting at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning for 45 minutes would be about the only time I can find a room and time. So if you want to pass the word on to others who haven't been here this morning, we'll take 45 minutes and we'll assume that everyone who, it's probably not appropriate for those who haven't, weren't here yesterday to come. So this will be deepening and a chance for some exchange about the way we negotiate with the powers of anger, ignorance, and desire. Secondly, totally self-centered here, if you could also spread the word that I'm trying to find a ride to Seattle on Sunday, I'd be helpful. I got a little sign out there, so I would love any hints on that as well. So today, we only have one worksheet, I'm fairly sure that we would go into overtime on this today as well, although it's only seven verses. This is the from the Gospel of Mark. It's one of those passages that I think is just classically Mark, and very deeply showing the insight of Mark. But it's also one of those passages that people don't like to read. So we will be really in process collectively for the whole hour as we work through the text. I call it a hyper slow reading of this one text. And we'll do it together. And I'll ask you not to read it now, but to read it with us together. And we will go really slowly. I'll start with just a couple of things on your sheet. So the first two paragraphs we can kind of read together, and then we'll even more slowly read the text from Mark. So I just thought that it would be, this has so much of the Markan perspective on life and Jesus that I wanted to be a little pedantic and mention six kinds of things that that happen in the Gospel of Mark that are also very related to this particular text. I say even more than I do about the Gospel of John the following, and a couple of you have heard me say this before. So Mark has bad grammar in Greek. It's clear. When I think it's a wonderful thing to know because it shows that Mark is writing this story, and Mark is, of course, in quotes. I assume that Mark is a plural. But Mark is clearly writing in Mark's non-native tongue. I think it's especially wonderful in our time where we are all over the world and in this country, we are negotiating the geniuses of people who are speaking in a non-native tongue. That is, there's so much wonderful stuff going on in people who are writing in a language that they weren't born with. And the discovery of immigrant peoples and migration peoples and refugee peoples who actually come to speech in stunning ways, I want to say because they are writing in a tongue that is not always one they're familiar with. So that's the authors of Mark. So we could make fun of the errors in Greek, but I think mostly I want to celebrate them. But on to the main point, even as we take in Mark's rough Greek, at the same time, Mark is so thoroughly composed that one needs to expect at least three different levels of meaning at really every turn. In other words, to stay with the story, you're going to find a stunningly careful composition that wants to get at us in several different ways at the same time. I said this the other day about John, but it's even more true of Mark. If you know Shakespeare and have been defeated by Shakespeare, or love Shakespeare, think of Mark as a second language Shakespeare composition in which every turn is a stunning set of thoughts and images from those who wrote it. So just a little bit more about Mark, and these are just things about Mark. There's lots more about Mark. These are six things that are true about most of Mark and true especially of the text we're going to read. Jesus is a healer from the beginning of Mark through most of the story. So Jesus doesn't do much healing from the cross. But by and large, Mark is a healer at every turn. And we'll immediately complicate that. Jesus regularly says to those who are healed in his presence that it was their confidence that healed them. This is, for instance, quite different than what Jesus says about his healing in John, in which Jesus says in John, it's me and I'm healing in order to show you who I really am. In Mark, Jesus regularly says, it's your confidence that healed you. In Mark, Jesus is not always able to heal. And at least one time, Jesus botches a healing and has to correct it. If you want the main references on that, it's when Jesus goes to his hometown, he's not able to heal. Secondly, there are two healings of blind people in Mark. One, Jesus gets it wrong the first time. You may remember this. It's kind of embarrassing to read it in church or something. But the first time Jesus heals the blind man, the guy comes back and says, you know, I'm not sure if this worked. It looks like I'm seeing trees walking. Mm-hmm. And Jesus says, oh, well, that means that. And then Jesus goes back and does it again and fixes it. Jesus is tortured to death in the story. In Mark, Jesus' resurrection is only known to a young man and the women who come to his tomb. The women fail to tell anyone else, and there is no other story in Mark of a report to anyone besides these people. It's the last story in Mark, and it's a story in which the reader knows because it's reading the story. But the way the story is, the word never gets out. In Mark, by and large, the disciples don't get what Jesus is doing or saying and are reprimanded for it. While nameless, yet significant women make the difference in how key events are redeemed. I'm not wanting to, this is of course an entire course on Mark that I just laid out. And I'm not wanting for us to study it. I just want you to know that these are larger companions to what go on in the tiny little text we're meditating on today. Okay, here's my, I'm going to read the instructions and hopefully will not contradict them. As a group or individual, and by the way, I have been teaching this for a long time, but I've never put it all together like I have this week in preparation. So I wrote this because I'm pretty sure, although this is the first time I've taught it exactly like this, it's not the last. Please read it as a group or individual. So you can take this home and do this again if you want. Please read the text below very slowly. In every marker with 4 stars, stop and think about what is happening in the story. If done in a group, discuss what is going on in the story at every 4-star marker, but do not discuss what it means. So if while we're reading through it, we can just be conscious of what's it like to be in the story. And it's hard to say whether we're making meaning of it or not, but let's just mostly be in action and reaction in the story, not with what it all means, but just what's going on right at that moment. We'll have time to think about its meaning afterwards. Do you all up there have handouts?
I was going to bring some up.
Okay, good, thank you. You may also discuss with us together how you're feeling at each 4-star point in the story. Please do not insist that everyone think or feel the same thing. You may ask informational questions of me, although I may not be able to provide the answer. You're getting used to that. Please listen carefully to one another's understanding of what is going on at each 4-star in the story and to one another's emotions about each 4-star in the story. After this hyper-slow reading together, there will be other things to do with and to say to one another. If one is reading along, be especially careful to take time at each 4-star in order to notice everything that is going on at each 4-star. So if you need a something to write with, you might want to have that close by. Okay, ready to read? Very slowly. I will ask, let's just ask random people to read until they run into a 4-star. So up for grabs, who starts the reading. And loudly, please.
From there, near Gennesaret, near the northwestern shore of the Sea of Galilee.
Stop. Thank you. All right. How are you feeling now?
Really glad that she had to pronounce that word.
Yeah, she did a good job. But no, really. The thing just to stop and take in is where Jesus is.
Wondering what that means.
Okay. Wondering what that means. Say a little bit more.
Well, I know that different locations have to do with whether it's among outcast people or the Jewish people or.
Mm-hmm. I don't know of any specific meaning for Gennesaret except that it's just outside the northwestern shore of the Sea of Galilee, so little bits towards the Mediterranean Sea. All right, so there he is in Israel. So just remember that he belongs to Israel, right? All right, someone else want to go to the next four stars?
He, Jesus, took a longer trip, 30 to 45 miles.
Yeah. All right, so how any thoughts about that? About
that didn't happen in one day.
Yeah, exactly. That's a wonderful thought. Thoughts like that? So this is a...
it's a long journey.
It's a long journey. And we're lucky that he has a moto pen, right?
I'm thinking, how far can he walk? How far do they walk in a day?
Yeah. And what do you think about that?
I'm thinking it's a different experience to be walking than the way we normally travel. So
yeah,
there's a lot of time to talk and experience and so forth.
Yeah, that's a wonderful thing to have us remember, even in Holden here, right? So I don't think I know of anybody who walks in the wonderful walks 30 to 45 miles in a day.
Especially in sandals.
Exactly. Notice the presumption that I just had in my statement. How long is he taking this trip?
It all depends on the surface, too, that he's walking on. I mean, is he walking on a path that is worn smooth?
Yeah.
Is he walking on gravel? Or, that would make a difference in your speed.
Yeah, so let's just stop here and work on have somebody else. What do you think the surface is? Is there a path?
I think it's a worn path.
Okay, it's a worn path. Mm-hmm. I would tend to agree. Anybody disagree on that?
Still with loose rocks.
Loose rock? And why would you suggest that?
Well, because travel on a path generates or dislodges things.
Mm-hmm.
So there are probably some natural kind of obstacles that recur.
Yeah. So, have any of you walked in Israel? And that sounds right to me, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Anybody know somewhat rocky paths in Israel? Yeah, there are a fair amount of them.
We don't know what time of year it is.
We don't know what time of year it is, do we?
I think
very
in fact,
important. Yeah.
The fact that it was a longer journey kind of indicates that this was a little bit out of the ordinary. And probably that was put there because there was a reason for the journey that maybe we'll find out as we continue to read.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
This is not something he typically did.
Right. Yeah, exactly right. Jesus' trips, while he is portrayed in Mark as basically always on the road, mm-hmm. this is longer.
I've always assumed reading this that he's alone,
uh-huh.
rather than by the path that he's alone, and I associate loneliness with that.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
We don't know what's he doing along the way. Is he teaching, preaching along the way, or is he saying, "Oh, I got to get to this place and just going"?
Right.
Yeah.
So I think it's good to leave those things hanging.
Mm-hmm.
Not knowing is a kind of knowing, right? But I would want to say that throughout Mark, often the text will tell us if he's got something going, if there are other people around. And so it may be interesting that the text doesn't tell us either of those things. I would want to say, if you can... think about this semi-historically and semi-fictionally. In other words, let's not assume that this is a report. But it will probably help us more to think of this as a highly composed story That doesn't mean it's none of it is true and we're already relying on what we know about Israel. But let's sort of give ourselves into the story as much as we can. Okay, let's have another step.
All the way into the foreign territory of Tyre.
Okay, so this adds to the 30 to 45 miles. Not only is it longer than usual, but it's into a foreign territory. What do you know or what do you feel about that?
I think about border crossing.
Right. And there, we think about that, but the reason to maybe not have to think about that is that Rome owns everywhere. That is, in most of the Mediterranean, Rome's in charge of everything. So the old borders and the cultural and national borders are somewhat blunted formally. But even going into another territory like that, crossing a border, most of the time one notices it whether there's a border crossing or not.
I'm wondering if he's having trouble in his hometown area. Maybe he's getting too popular and he doesn't want to hasten what might eventually happen. So he's leaving his home territory a bit to minister in a different area.
Yeah, so we're right around the corner from getting more information about that. That's really an important noticing. What's it like for anybody to cross into a foreign territory?
It's risky.
It's risky. Say more.
He doesn't know how he will be received or accepted in a foreign territory.
Yeah. Anybody have other responses to going into foreign territories?
Language barrier?
In the U.S., there are people that are worried about going from one place to another.
Anyone interested in going to foreign territories?
But he's probably said by this time already that he feels called to the home people of Israel, called first and foremost to the people of Israel. And now he's going outside of Israel.
Yeah, that's really important, and I like the way you phrased that with the probably. I have to say to you that there's a very similar story in Matthew to this. Not in Luke, but in Matthew says explicitly in this story that he knows that he's only to go to Israel. So that doesn't mean that that's what Mark thinks. But just to say, you're using that phrase is actually a quotation from Matthew's version of this story. All right, let's go a little further in the foreign territory.
He entered a house and did not want anyone to know that he was there.
So we're on to one of the questions that were just raised, right? Why is he going there? Whatever it is, it's kind of secret. So it looks like this is not a trip to expand his mission.
Maybe he needed a retreat.
And he's got a house.
Yeah. Had he been here before?
Yeah. Certainly not in Mark he has. I suspect we can't underestimate this question of who he's going outside of the country.
I think
You know, I didn't quite hear that.
Oh, I'm up here.
Oh, no wonder. I can't even see her.
I think going to a new place and being in a new environment can reframe your perspective and even challenge some of your perspective.
Yeah. Oh, just underneath the surface, isn't it? Here.
Could you repeat that, what yeah. she said?
Oh, right yeah. Sometimes going to another territory and nation, country, helps rethink or gives new perspectives. Mm-hmm. And that also probably has to play into, or might play into, the fact that Israel, long term, not unlike other territories, but especially so, thinks of itself as different.
Yes,
so going outside
different.
As different. Going outside there might be something very much like you just said.
I'd like to know whose house and why.
Well, congratulations. Right, so keep that question. Again, as I want to say, in these things, and this is the way work works, not knowing is knowing, or it's another kind of knowing. In other words, that just doing that makes us feel different, that we don't know. In the story, and I'm almost sure that Mark wants to prompt that. Wait a minute, you didn't tell. Okay, another next slide.
Yet he could not escape notice, for a woman whose little daughter had an unclean spirit.
All right. Okay. So if somebody found him out, he doesn't want to be found out, but he's been found out. Mm-hmm. And by this woman whose daughter is sick. Someone want to give the long or short version of what it means to have an unclean spirit?
Could be mental health issue.
Could be, yeah. That could have also physical mm-hmm. ramifications.
Epilepsy, perhaps epilepsy or something like that.
Usually they name epilepsy.
Oh, they do.
Work.
Okay.
Yeah. But it could be. By the way, Barbara Rossing is teaching, giving a talk on healing, and so that's really fun to have during this week as well. Yeah, so some kind of sickness. I would want to say that in the Jesus seminar, when we were trying to figure out some of the historical dimensions of all this, we brought in, and I alluded to this earlier, we brought in anthropologists of healing from non-Western countries. And one of the things that changed us about thinking about how much Jesus really was a healer is these anthropologists, you know, kind of just scientist people who were wanting to know about things. They reported back to us in the 3-year study. They reported back to us that in Africa, Asia, and the areas between Asia and Australia, that they found tons of healing that was really happening, that was very much like the healing modalities of the first century. And that it was assumed that it helped physical and mental illness, and they saw it help mental and physical illness, and they saw it not work. So one of the things there one could see is healers sometimes make it heal and sometimes don't. That's actually in the Markan story.
The word for is kind of like because, and I think it's interesting that he couldn't escape notice, and I think it denotes urgency.
Something's going on, right?
For this person, especially going to notice that he's there.
Yeah, so this is a really a person who's working hard at finding him out.
Yeah.
To find out something for
him. Yeah. Finding a healer? Weren't there other healers?
Exactly. Yeah, so it could be that she was trying to find somebody else too. Yeah, that's great.
But if this was a foreign country, then somehow information about him had made it there.
And by the way, so this would be like living in San Diego and going to Mexico. It's not like get ready for a 3-month trip.
So here's a question on that. Would it be like that, and I'm thinking about language, or would it be more like living in Washington and going to Canada?
Oh, that's really important. Thank you. That is correct of what I said. By and large, the language in both places is Aramaic. Nobody speaks Hebrew anymore in Israel at that point. And both of it is Aramaic. And in both countries, in quotes, in both countries, there's a lot of Greek and some Latin. The commercial language is Greek. The governmental language is Latin, and the common language of the people is Aramaic. So going here probably for a peasant like Jesus, it would not be learning a language, but it would be like being in Israel itself, where foreigners are in control and speaking other languages. Yeah, Rome is in control of the entire Mediterranean. Yeah.
I noticed the word little.
Yeah.
A little daughter, and whether it should or doesn't, it elicits empathy.
Yeah, and that is, I was just double checking with that in the Greek, and it is the diminutive. It's an intentional word that means, so it's actually going to have another diminutive in the story as well.
I'm just wondering how Jesus is feeling. He may have wanted to go to a place like Holden, where he was exhausted from doing a lot of healings. Uh-huh. He'd been around a lot of people. He wanted to go away somewhere where nobody knew where he was going, so that he could have some rest and renewal. And here shows up this woman with this little girl.
Yeah, right. Yes?
Oh, I'm just going back to the house. How did he know, did he just go into any house, or did they know he was coming in this house? Or he didn't want anybody to know that he was there?
That's just
the first time I read it, I thought the little kid and the mother were in the house.
No, they're not. They're
right.
Somebody else's house, yeah. Huh. Yeah, and thanks for helping us know what we don't know. And I would want to say that's almost certainly intentional in Mark, to leave us in that kind of dark. Let's stay with the previous question. So we finally got someone saying, Jesus must have felt this way. Anybody else noticing anything Jesus must have felt?
He was compelled.
He was compelled. Right. Say more about that word.
Well, he was compelled by the situation, even though he maybe wanted to escape. The situation with the little girl who's sick compelled him to do something.
Let's move on.
Immediately heard about him, and she came and fell at his feet.
All right, we got the heard about him thing talked about. And so she falls at his feet.
Immediately.
By the way, that's one of Mark's favorite words. Mark is a lot of things happen immediately. What do you think about her falling at his feet.
She really wants to be noticed.
Who does?
She.
She wants, oh yeah, so it's a dramatic thing, that's wonderful, yeah.
It's an act of submission.
An act of submission, yeah. It's, this is, she just didn't happen to stumble in front of him, right? Probably not. By the way, this word, in terms of homage or allegiance, this word can mean worship. It doesn't look like it means it there. It does mean fall down, but it can mean worship as well.
Or begging. I think it's kind of like she's begging.
Ah, that's a wonderful angle.
Could people speak louder, please?
Yeah, could people speak louder, please?
I'm kind of interested in immediately, and whether that means, and we won't know, but it could be that Jesus is here, and she knew what that meant. Or it could be that it's a longer sort of a communication in which there's this guy here, and he does incredible things, and you might want to take your daughter to see him. And so, it has to do with sort of how that word spreads, you know, and how the communication kind of occurs, and how fast it's happening, and what the elapsed time is. And you just don't know.
No, we don't know that, and that's a nice range of possibilities. But since Mark uses that word so much, I want to say another additional level of that. I think that this Mark creates an anxious spirit in the whole gospel. Uh-oh. That's the way Mark is written in Greek. So it's not, I think it's in those things, and but we have to ask the larger question of why Mark throws that word around so much. And I think it's a wanting to make this a pressing story where all kinds of surprising things happen.
If we take this in isolation, Jesus has three options. He can walk over the woman, he can walk around her, or he has to deal with it. So.
Thanks for saying that loudly.
Well, I would say this mother is probably pretty desperate, because not only is her daughter sick, but she's unclean. So that must mean that they're spurned and something she doesn't understand.
Absolutely. Let's take the next one.
Now the woman was a Gentile.
Nay, they said that together. Okay, Gentile. Let's just remember that that is a category of Israel. What Gentile means in this story is not us. Gentile is not. So this word is sometimes translated as pagan. It really means the nations. It literally means the nations. So she's a member of the nations, meaning she's not the member of our nation. Okay, and then the next phrase helps us right there. Okay, I'll read it. Of Phoenician, so Syrophoenician origin. That's the nation she belongs to. So this is, at this point, it is a combination of Syria and Phoenicia.
So it'd be northeast?
Yeah. Northwest.
Yeah, northwest.
Along the coast.
Next one. Next phrase.
She begged.
Yeah, we've got that already, right? In the feel, in the language of the body. This is important. She's going out of the way. She's desperate. Next phrase.
Him to throw the demon out of her daughter.
Mm-hmm. So notice the change of vocabulary here between unclean spirit and demon. I think they mean somewhat common things, but it's another emotional shift to something that is less neutral and more threatening. Okay, so that's look what's happened. We've got this picture kind of nicely deep in us, and let's, so now the next almost sentence helps us into the crux.
He said to her, "Let the children be fed first."
What does that mean?
Children of Israel.
Children of Israel. Absolutely. I don't think there's any problem with agreeing on that, unless someone else has another thing. Mm-hmm. This is the children of Israel should be fed first. Well, how do we feel about Jesus saying, we've got a picture of what's
America first. Sounds very Trumpian.
Other ways of putting that?
Come on, Jesus. You're better.
Okay. We're wanting to wish that he had said something else, right? Yeah, almost certainly. And this is now, let's have read the next phrase. How long?
For it is not fair to take the children's food.
How are we feeling?
Oh, Jesus.
Let's say some of this out loud.
Disappointed.
Disappointed. Is there another way to read this than your disappointment? Okay, all right.
I would feed my children first to make sure their marriage.
Uh-huh.
I would feed other people's children too.
Okay. Great.
Practical level.
Thank you. That was a wonderful answer to my question.
I feel discounted.
You feel discounted.
Personally discounted. Like the part of me that identifies as the Syrophoenician or the Gentile feels discounted.
Okay, the next phrase is bringing this all home, and you're going to get some of my language translation for you, but if someone would read the next fairly long phrase.
And throw it to the dogs. In first century Greek and Mediterranean culture, the word dog is a slur directed against both women and foreigners.
So we've got, let's just make sure we're in the picture. We're now in a picture of children and dogs. Would you think that would be a common picture on just the domestic level where Jesus is? Yeah, it would. But comparing children and dogs is kind of a picture that we have in this rural area. But it's now charged, isn't it?
And Jesus saying this when we have had experience of him being so gracious.
Right.
The children, for instance.
Yeah, right. So here I want to just say that's true in Mark and not true. Jesus is relatively angry also in Mark, as well as kind and compassionate.
In
Mark, yeah. And we don't even know whether it happened. But it's a pretty powerful story that's coming at us right now.
Oh, well, this is not just Jesus being angry, right? This is Jesus being mean and rude and racist, right? So that's what's so hard about this, is I have a hard time thinking of other places in the gospel where Jesus is such an obvious jerk.
Right.
And I've read all these commentaries that say, oh, Jesus is just trying to challenge the woman, to challenge her assumptions, which makes no sense. I mean, I guess maybe, but he don't have to be such a jerk about it. He can heal the daughter first, and then we can have the challenging conversation. So in any event, that is what I like about that.
Thank you. That that, I think, is a very strong read of this. Anyone see it differently? I think you summarized a bunch of the growing uncomfortableness. And then when we realize that it is bigotry, or I would even say, it's likely we would say, Jesus just used the B word. The female dog. So that would be the level of what you're saying. It's not only a slur, but it's a slur that is really strong.
And we might be experiencing him being a little more human than we're comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or being a little bit more racist or wrong or things like that.
Yeah. Right? Yes, and I also wonder, because we read earlier that he was we thought he was going away because he wanted to get away, or somehow we've had that conversation. And if now his retreat is interrupted, he may be experiencing emotions and an anger that he wouldn't have if he were in a different place himself, mm-hmm. in his own mind.
Yeah, thanks very much for keeping this larger picture we've drawn in place. That doesn't discount.
No.
And this may be anticipating a little bit too much, but I think it raises the issue about what Jesus was like, and did he learn, or did he know everything?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's really important to know, and I would want to encourage us to remember that the four different Gospels have four different Jesuses. And this is a particularly Markan Jesus, who I've already told you a whole bunch of things that are only dynamics in Mark. But yes, this too.
This is helping me relate to Jesus in a more personal, human way, I think, because I'm in a caregiving profession, and I understand when caregivers get to the point where they're so exhausted and have nothing more to give that they reach, it's like hitting a wall. It sort of feels like that he's hit a wall and he just can't deal with this anymore.
Mm-hmm. And let's keep that in tune with what we've been saying is, man, are we disappointed in him.
Yeah.
Let's take the next phrase.
But he answered.
Okay, there we are. After that happens, she spoke up.
Yeah, she persisted.
Pretty brave.
And now the next one I'll take, because I've slashed it here. And she says, Sir or Lord, this, I'm doing both translations of the common word. So this is the common word. This is the word that is used for Jesus as Lord. But it also just means sir. I think probably the translation is really sir, but this is probably also Mark, which wants you to hear both of them. And if you put Lord in that phrase, right, the tension inside of our feelings is even higher, because we just got disappointed, and now we've got an echo of Jesus as Lord.
So I'm going to reveal some of my ignorance about Mark. But toward the end, does Mark later on give us stories about Jesus reaching out to Gentiles? Are those Markan kind of stories?
There are. Not a lot of them, but a few.
So could we be watching the evolution of Jesus? And
yeah. Actually, the next phrase, or the next story, is probably that. Not in the same place, but in another semi-Gentile place. So this could be an evolutionary thing, it could be some other thing. It could be we understand how he's hurt, or it could be erratic. Yeah.
I guess I was just thinking about the context. He has that discussion
It is. Yeah, that's really important, too. If we had time to read more of Mark, we'd see all these ironies. Jesus is not all that consistent. Jesus is gripping and a really powerful figure in ways that I think we need to really claim. But it's not even. Let's see here what our answer is.
Even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs.
How are we feeling about that?
Dogs haven't changed in 2,000 years.
You're right.
Quite a bit.
Yeah. Right. That's good. And so how do you feel about her answer?
That's bolder than you'd ever expect her to be.
Yeah.
Bold. I always liked that part.
Bolder, yeah, real bold. And how about strategic?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, this is both bold, and she thinks, all right, this guy's a bigot, I want my way.
Yeah. It kind of goes back to that four, her motivation.
Yeah.
Her motivation
right.
is...
I'm going to get my daughter healed, even if he's kind of a jerk.
Whatever.
Yeah, right. Whatever. But no, she's focused because she's thinking with him. Mm-hmm. And say, so how can I get this guy to help?
I'm wondering if he said it, like the tone of how he said it could have different meanings, right? Mm-hmm. So he could say it as a question, like questioning her, the question for her to answer, or he could say it as a definitive, I'm not giving you anything. Like, to me, it's hard to say that he's saying this in a mean way. Like, there's a lot of times where he says, like, you've heard it, people say these things, what's your response? And here's my response. Mm-hmm.
That's important to keep as a notion. I do want us to notice he argues for this, though. He says, listen, I'm not going to miss the children, and it's not right to feed a dog before the children. So there is sort of an argument there, but I think there's some, certainly this raises all the questions that we can ask.
If answered, is that, I guess I really like that verb, if she answered. There's confidence in that. There's
right. And then, what does he say back to her?
Then he said to her, for saying that, you may go.
And then we'll just add that, and the demon has left your daughter. So what does he do?
Heals her.
He heals her in abstention. I mean, maybe she thought she'd talk him into coming to her house and fixing her up, but this is a dramatic healing.
And because of what she said.
Right, yeah. So that all of you who are liking what she said, he did too. So I think that this gets the question of whether it's a question or not. It feels like she convinced him.
It almost seems like she shames him into doing something.
Although maybe not as much as he shames her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then she went home, found the child lying on the bed, and the demon gone. Mm-hmm.
When you think about wise wisdom, you know, I'll grant someone who's wise a little bit of latitude to have a bad moment, you know. And I love your phrase, not knowing is a kind of knowing. And someone who's got the humility to be able to kind of see that they've missed something or that there's a different way to understand something or learn something, which I think Jesus demonstrates here. That's an indication of his wisdom. Even in the face of his human weakness.
Right. So, the surprise on so many levels in the story, and the tension, I want to say is a gift. Not just in thinking about who Jesus was, but who Jesus might be for you. And I'm going to ask you to turn the page. And this is any homework you want to do anytime. Anytime you want to talk to me too. But I'm going to just read a bunch of questions I would ask for us spiritually. And several ways of praying or meditating on this text. How do you feel or think about the result that the Syrophoenician girl was healed? So just take time to do that, if you want to. How do you feel about the way Jesus responds to the Syrophoenician woman? We've had a bunch of answers there. You might have a different one. How do you feel or think about Jesus having healed the Syrophoenician girl? So stay with that, with your feeling and thinking level. How do you feel about the Syrophoenician woman's actions on behalf of her daughter? Some of us have answered that, but you might have some more. How do you feel about the Syrophoenician woman in the story overall? We've had a bunch of kind of go-girl responses there. You may have different. How do you feel or think about the Syrophoenician woman as a character or a person? So I want to suggest possibly that here, claiming her as the main character in this story might help us spiritually. How do you feel about Jesus' healing practice in the Gospel of Mark? I've given you some background, but here's one. So Jesus is generally a healer, and this is part of him being a healer. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about Jesus and the Gospel of Mark? Here's where I would want to encourage longer thinking and feeling about this, because I think Jesus and Mark has so much to offer us over against what I would call the Orthodox Jesus for now. What relationship might you have with this Jesus? I'm going to push this a little bit further. What would the learning you might have from this gospel and or Jesus? What if you stayed with this Jesus even when you were embarrassed with him? How might this Jesus help you? How might this Jesus fail you? What if failing and helping are a part of your relationship to Jesus? How would it be like for you to be in relationship with a Jesus who would help you and fail you? I can't tell you how serious I am about this question and how if you can stay with it, how it might be helpful. The only thing that Jesus says on the cross in the Gospel of Mark is, my God, why have you abandoned me? What connections can you make between Jesus on the cross in Mark and Jesus in relationship to the Syrophoenician woman and child? Multiple abandonments and multiple good news. What might that be? How might the Syrophoenician woman teach, support, and or heal you? How might the Syrophoenician woman teach, support, and heal people in your society and world? How might the Syrophoenician woman fail you and others? How might this Mark and Jesus teach, support, and heal you? How might this Mark and Jesus teach, support, and or heal people in your society? What options do you have for yourself, your society, and your world other than the Syrophoenician woman or Jesus? Here's some ways to pray with this. I'm over time, I apologize, I'm gonna read for another 2 minutes. If you need to leave, I understand. Open your heart to the Syrophoenician woman. invite her to be your companion, not just your helper or someone you help. Listen to her. Talk to her. Ask her to think with you about your beautiful and broken world. Open your heart to this mark of Jesus. Invite him to be your companion, not just your helper or someone you help. Listen to him. Talk to him. Ask him to think with you about your beautiful and broken world. Ask for help from this Jesus, who just messed up the healing of and succeeded with the Syrophoenician woman. Ask for help. Ask for help from this Syrophoenician woman. Cry out with this Jesus on the cross. Speak to God for this Jesus on the cross. So I hope what I'm wanting is for Mark to open up a whole new kind of piety, a whole new kind of spiritual action with this person who is clearly flawed, powerful, loving, and impatient. Sorry I didn't have enough time for us to work on that. Talk to me more around the edges. See you tomorrow.
Thank you.